I shall never forget little Joey. Though I forget all the friends that I shared in my early schooling years, little Joey I will always remember in my mind. Little Joey was a small frame boy who had those dark framed glasses and boasted a set of teeth that even a buck would have been proud of. And so when it came to brawn, little Joey was rather deficient. But when it came to brains, he was highly gifted. And so every time when the exams came and we all had our problems, little Joey was the most popular kid in class, as everybody lined up to ask him the questions that they had found during their studies. Joey, how many legs does an insect have? Joey, what's the square root of 16? Joey, what color was Napoleon's white horse? And so on and on, we would ask these questions to little Joey. Little Joey was never alone during these times, and he would always give us a full and complete answer, without hesitation. But you see, then there was a change. A change that I never realized then until many years later. A change that taught me a lot about human nature. You see, when all the exams were over, and when all the pressure was gone and the anxiety was finished with, then all of us went out to play. And little Joey, well, we forgot about little Joey. And he would sit there on the corner of the field, alone with himself and his thoughts, as we went on doing the things that we liked best. And so we would continue, as if he never existed, until at last the exams reared their ugly head again, and the problems came again, and sure enough, we would be back to little Joey. And without a cry of objection or the slightest restraint, little Joey would answer all our questions and all our queries, hoping that maybe just this time we would remember him. But we never did. Oh, how fickle, brethren and sisters, human nature is, isn't it? Oh, how fickle our human nature is. Because isn't it so true that what was true of me and my friends all those years ago is ever so true of every one of us in this room? For so often, it's only when we need someone that we have a relationship with that person. And when that need is gone, there is no longer a need to be friends or whatever it may be. And I want to apply that to our worship with God. For is it not true, brethren and sisters, that so often, when we're in need, then we're on our knees to God. But when the times are going well, when the problems have left us and we no longer have any needs, well, then we leave him. And we don't remember all the things that he did for us in the past. It was the Apostle Paul who penned the words of 1 Corinthians 10 verse 12. And although there are so many exhortations found in those words, I want to highlight a specific exhortation we can get from them this morning. And Paul says these words, that him that thinketh he standeth, take heed lest he fall. And we'll do well, brethren and sisters, to remember those words for the week to come. Let him that thinketh he standeth, take heed lest he fall. And you see, brethren and sisters, exhortation after exhortation, we stand up here and we exhort one another to be strong in times of adversity, to hold fast when everything's going wrong, to fight the good faith. And so, brethren and sisters, we do this. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's good for us to do this. But really, we must understand one plain fact, that we're not really most vulnerable when we're down and out. When the problems of life are encompassing us, that's not the most vulnerable time. No, brethren and sisters, it's when everything's going well. It's when everything's going just as we wanted it to. It's when all the problems are disappearing. It's when life is merrily greeting us with a smile. That's when we're most vulnerable. It's when we don't have a need anymore for the God that we worship, that we have to be very careful, brethren and sisters. Because it's at that time that just for a moment, albeit just a small moment, we think we can stand alone. And so we slowly push away God and we try to stand by ourselves. And so, brethren and sisters, it seems that it's only when we have needs, when we're in trouble, that we seem to turn to God. And when he helps us and we come out of that trouble, we forget all about him, just like little Joey. And he's left in a little corner of our lives. And that's it. That's all the time and the space that we have for him as we get on with our own busy lives. It's almost like a vicious cycle, isn't it? You see, at one moment we're in this toil and tribulation, and we're ever so close to God, praying and asking Him that He will take away our problems and our toils and our troubles. And so eventually, after a period of time, God in His mercy does just that. And then slowly but surely, the three prayers we used to do every single day become two, and then one. And then maybe, you know, I'm so busy, I can't even fit a prayer in. And the readings, we always did the readings. And now we can't quite remember when last we did do our readings. And so slowly, we begin to forget all about God. We begin to think that we can stand alone. And before we know it, brethren and sisters, just like Paul said, we've fallen to the ground. And so then the cycle begins again. And over again it goes. It's something we need to acknowledge. And it's not something that's just particular to all of us in this room. Even the greatest men of faith experience this very same problem. One that comes to mind immediately, and I'm sure you'll all know, is David. You see, for David in his young life, it was filled with problems, wasn't it? The young David had so much adversity. He was a refugee. He feared his life every single day. He was a wanted man. The king of Israel, Saul, wanted his life. And so David had no permanent dwelling place. Day after day he ran from cave to cave, not knowing where next he would get his food or his shelter from. And so it was for David that he had to be close to God, for he had a need. And never, ever in the life of David was he closer to God than at this time when he was in adversity. And so time and time again, David fell on his knees and he prayed to God, pleading to God that He would take away all these problems, all this anxiety. And we read words like in Psalm 13, "How long wilt thou forget me, O Lord? Forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and hear me, O Lord my God. Lighten mine eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Deliver me from mine enemies, O my God. Defend me from them that rise up against me." There was the prayer of David, always saying, "Lord, remove these problems from me." And so eventually, God in His abundant mercy does just that, doesn't He? And suddenly all the problems of David begin to evaporate. He becomes king of Israel. And no longer does he have to fear for his life. And no longer does he have to sleep in caves, because the castle of the king of Israel is his dwelling place. And so slowly, the problems begin to evaporate. And then, for a moment, albeit just a short moment, David thinks he can stand alone. And it came to pass, after the year was expired, at the times when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon, and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. And it came to pass in an evening tide that David arose off his bed, and walked upon the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman washing herself. And the woman was very beautiful to look upon. And David sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, "Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" And David sent messengers and took her, and she came in unto him, and he lay with her. And the woman conceived and sent and told David, and said, "I am with child." Just for a moment, brethren and sisters, David thought he could do it alone, as if to say to God, "Thank you for your rod and your staff, which I needed in all the times when I went through the valley of the shadow of death, but I won't be needing them now." And for a moment, brethren and sisters, he tried to stand alone. And then Nathan comes and says, "Thou art the man." And David falls, realizing the error of his ways. You see, brethren and sisters, there can be no doubt that we are most vulnerable when everything's going just the way we want it to. We are most vulnerable when our jobs are sure, when the money is coming in, when our house is secure, when our loved ones are safe, when our problems are few. Then, brethren and sisters, let us be very careful, for it may be that just for a moment we think that we can stand alone, and then, brethren and sisters, we shall surely fall, as Paul told us. You see, you can't stand without God, isn't that true? Paul doesn't say, let him that standeth take heed lest he fall. He says, let him that thinketh he standeth. What Paul is saying is, not one of us can stand by ourselves. We all need God's rod and staff to help us. We can't stand alone. You remember the image of Nebuchadnezzar, which represented man in all its fullness? And it was made of a head of gold, and we know it went down through the silver and the brass, and finally we come to the feet, they were made of clay and iron. And if you had to make that image, you don't need an engineer to tell you, it wouldn't stand. It's top heavy, and that's what man is. He can't stand without the help of God. Solomon says in Proverbs 11 verse 28, the man that trusteth in his own riches will fall. And it's Paul who says in 2 Timothy, the foundation of God, that is that which standeth sure. It's only God's foundation which standeth sure. And so we need to put our trust in God. We will be unable to stand alone, brethren and sisters. So there we have the problem. And I guess it would be pointless for me to go on showing us how weak we are and how we always fall when we are given the blessings of God. But now what we need to do is to try to find ways to stop that. To try to find practical ways in which every one of us can make sure that in our times of abundance, we will stay close to God. Well, the first thing we need to do, brethren and sisters, is to realize what the core of the problem is. And I would like to suggest this, that the core to our problem, brethren and sisters, that when everything goes right, we forget about God and try to stand alone, is this one thing, the motive for why we worship God. And just ask yourself, what is my motive for worshiping God? And you may be surprised that for most of us, our motive for worshiping God is because of what He can do for us. It's because He can solve our problems. It's because He can give an answer to our needs. And brethren and sisters, if that is our motive for worshiping God, then of course, we have a problem. We have to make sure, brethren and sisters, that we are not just worshiping God because we need Him, because we have problems. Well, ask yourself this question. Imagine a world where there were no problems. Imagine if you lived in a time when sorrow and sighing were taken away, when there was no problem whatsoever. Would you be here this morning? Would you have come here this morning to praise and honor the name of God? You've got no needs. You've got no problems. Would you have been here? I wonder how many of us would be here, brethren and sisters. We need to get our motive right. We need to worship God, not for what He can do for us, but for what we can do for Him. Ours must not be a little Joey friendship. It must be a friendship based on the knowledge of what God is, of what He has accomplished, that He is the Creator of heaven and earth, that He is the only true life giver, that He has given each and every one of us life. That should be our motive for worshiping God. For brethren and sisters, if our only motive is because He can solve our needs, how will we praise and honor God in the kingdom? You see, in the kingdom there will be no more needs. Sorrow and sighing will flee away. God says, I will wipe away every tear from your eyes. There will no longer be any sin. How will we then praise and honor God if we have no more needs or problems? We need to get our motive right, brethren and sisters, and that would be a good start for us trying to worship God in our times of abundance. So, brethren and sisters, what other ways can we employ in order to make sure that we stay strong during the good times? Well, the first thing is that we need to acknowledge that it's during those times that we're most vulnerable. We need to acknowledge that when everything's going well, that we need to stop and say, now I must be careful. I must remember the words of Paul and make sure I don't think I can go it alone. And brethren and sisters, the best thing to do, well, from experience and what I feel, is that we need to make God an important part of our daily routine. You see, life is a routine, isn't it? And God has to be made an important part of that daily routine. And there are many ways that we can achieve this. We have to ensure that we don't squeeze God into the little corner of our life. As we get on with the busy things, we need to make sure that He is definitely a part of our life. What ways can we do that? Well, Perhaps a very good way that we can do that, and I'm sure there are many that you can think of, but a good way, brethren and sisters, is every night before you go to bed, take a pencil and a paper and write down the numbers 1 to 10. And for yourself, write down 10 blessings that you have especially received from God today. Just 10. I mean, I'm sure you could list 100, but 10 specifically that you have received from Him today. And you write them down one by one. And brethren and sisters, by doing that, we will be able to get into perspective our success. We will be able to realize in the good times that God is the one who has put us in the position that we found ourselves in. You know, it's amazing when you look at cat's eyes that we find on the road. They are of no use. And it's only when it's dark and they reflect the lights of the car's headlights that they are of any use. And it's exactly the same with the stars. The stars are always shining. But it's only when it's dark that we appreciate them, because we can see them. And so, brethren and sisters, so often, it's only when we're going through the dark times of our life that we appreciate and see the blessings of God. We need to make sure that when we're going through the good times, that we also appreciate the blessings of God. And so every day, 10 blessings, brethren and sisters, just 10, and that will help us to understand all the beautiful things that God does for us day by day. Another way, brethren and sisters, is to commit a verse to memory. How many of us do that? Just one verse for the whole week. Remember a verse, so that whenever you have spare time to be with yourself, you can think about the verse. The words of God can go through your mind. Perhaps you would like to start with a verse that we have dealt with this morning. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Remember those words. Remember the exhortation from David's life. And make sure that when life is going well for you, you don't think you can stand unless you should fall. And so, brethren and sisters, there are countless ways that we can employ in order to make sure that we always keep close to God, no matter whether we are walking through green pastures or through the valley of the shadow of death. You see, we must be careful of one thing, that we don't fool ourselves. And we're good at that, aren't we? We're good at making excuses, justifying the way that we live our life and saying, well, it's not really that bad. Oh, well, I didn't make it for that meeting, but, you know, this reason and that reason. Good excuses, brethren and sisters. Humankind is the best at making excuses. Adam, why did you do this? Oh, well, it wasn't me. It was this wife, which you gave me. Saul, what are all these sheep being brought back for? Weren't you meant to slaughter everything? Oh yes, but we thought we'd bring these back, and I'll tell you what we're going to do with them. We're going to actually make a massive sacrifice to the Lord. Very good excuses, brethren and sisters. But you know what? Those excuses only fooled Adam and Saul respectively. Not one of them fooled God. We cannot make excuses for the way that we live our lives that will fool God. They will only fool ourselves. So brethren and sisters, we need to employ positive ways to keep ourselves on the track. And what's more, every now and again, stop yourself and say, all right, Matthew, let's think about this. I need to look at my service to God and compare how it does with my service to other things in the world. That's a good way to see how you're doing in the truth. How is my service to God doing in comparison to my service with all other things? Well, that's an interesting point, isn't it, brethren and sisters? Funny how 10 rand seems so much when you take it to church and so little when you take it to the supermarket. Funny how long an hour seems serving the Lord and how short 60 minutes are when you're socializing with friends. Funny how laborious it is to read a chapter of the Bible and how easy it is to read 300 pages of the latest novel. Funny how we can't think of anything to say when we pray, and yet we don't have any difficulty talking for hours to a friend on the phone. Funny how we seem to have difficulty learning to worship God, but find it so easy to learn to do so many other things. Funny how refreshing a sudden rain is at home, but how foreboding it is at lecture time. Funny how we feel too tired after work to attend a Bible class, but how invigorated we get when there's a party after work. Funny how we simply don't have time to play our part in the service for the Lord. But how we have so much time to watch television. Funny how bored and restless we get when listening to a brother's 25-minute exhortation, but how interesting it is to sit through a 3-hour movie. Funny how unqualified we feel to teach Sunday school, but how qualified we feel enjoying the local sports or recreational club. And so we could go on, brethren and sisters, comparing our service to the world to our service with God. But really, funny it isn't, brethren and sisters. Perhaps it's just a reflection of how mixed up our priorities are, of how every time we're giving God second best. Well, brethren and sisters, we've tried to find some practical ways in which we can stop that, in which we can make sure that in everything we do, we give our best to God, in which we can make sure that whether it be through the valley of the shadow of death or through the green pastures, we hold strong to God's staff and His rod, knowing that we can never stand alone, knowing that we always need the support of God. And friends, from hindsight, as I sit now and look back on the history of my life, I know that if I could go back all those years, I would talk to little Joey. I would remember him. I would go to the corner of the field and try to keep him company. But you know what, brethren and sisters? We have a God who has done far more than little Joey ever did for me. A God who has helped us in some of the greatest troubles in our life when we knew no way of escape. And will we leave him in a little corner of our lives? I tell you today, brethren and sisters, let us remember him for all that he has done. Amen.